up, my mom 19 years ago and my dad 4 years ago. I'm second oldest of five, with an older brother, Rusty, and three younger sisters, Connie, Marcia, and Lisa. Connie was born with a severe birth defect, and I remember seeing her in her incubator through the glass nursery window as she clung to life. Although doctors tried their best to save her, she went to be with Jesus when she was 28 days old. Our family was made up of a long line of pastors and faithful church members. Even though we had suffered loss and were very protected, there was a lot of laughter in our home, and we were very loved. I was an energetic introvert and enjoyed my large family. Over the years, we moved some for Daddy's job, but we moved back to Dallas in 1969 and joined a good church in our neighborhood. When I was around eight, the church had a special evening service, and the pastor talked about Jesus and John 3:16 and 17. That night, I understood for the first time that God doesn't count us as good based on what we do. Psalm 53:3, every one of them has turned aside. There is no one who does good, not even one. People want to go their own way, and I was no different. But God made us to be in fellowship with him. In John 10:27, Jesus said, "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me." During our pastor's message, God gave me the faith to believe. Ephesians 2:8 shows me, "For by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God." I gave my life to Jesus, and I didn't understand everything about what it would look like, but was relieved to know that my eternity with God was sealed. It was the most significant date of my life because knowing Jesus was the only way that I made it through the events of the next summer and all of my years since. Not long after my decision to follow Jesus in June of 71, when Rusty was 12, he went on an overnight camping trip with his boys' Sunday school class and two teachers. That evening, the boys had fun and went swimming. Early on Saturday, they went fishing, but when the sun came up, it got very hot, and the boys begged to go swimming again. The sponsors hesitated because they weren't at the designated swimming area, but since it was so hot, they gave in. The boys were playing underwater, and they began to call for help. They couldn't find Rusty, an excellent swimmer, in the murky water. The men jumped in and found him in a weedy area. They brought him to shore, but he had been underwater a long time. He died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. The rest of us were at home that morning when a car sped into our driveway. It was our church pastor and choir director. I was in the kitchen, and the choir director came in to use the phone, not realizing I was in the room. After a few words, he said, "The hand boy has drowned." I thought he said Rusty had gotten drunk, until I reasoned out that he couldn't get drunk on his favorite soft drink, which was Coca-Cola. In seconds, I understood what he really said. I ran from the room, silently crying. I was very close to Rusty. He had been my hero for lots of reasons. He loved Jesus, and he crammed more life into 12 years than many 40-year-olds. The next week or so is a blur, but a few memories stand out. One is crying myself to sleep on the floor at the home of another family in our church. We were staying with them while my parents took care of all the necessary arrangements in the days before and after the funeral. Another memory during that time is of the worst advice I've ever received. It was the day after Rusty's funeral. The Sunday morning, we were taken to church by the family that was keeping us. I was missing Mama and Daddy and hadn't gotten to talk to them since I'd heard the news all by myself. And here I was in the sanctuary where the funeral had been. The organ started to play, and as soon as I heard the music, tears flowed in streams down my face. The mom of the family looked over and motioned to me to come with her. We left the sanctuary and went down the hall to an empty classroom. She sat me down and flatly told me, "It's over now, and it's time to stop crying." Believe me, I did, and I never cried in front of anyone again about it for years. Now I know that it's okay to cry, and it's good to cry. One of my favorite Bible verses, Jesus wept, John 11:35, tells me something wonderfully intimate about God. He is an emotional God, and since I know he created us in his image, I am free to express the emotions of grief. In 2 Corinthians 12:9, Paul wrote, "But Jesus said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.'" After Rusty drowned, we rarely attended church for the next 6 years. Until I was in high school, I didn't have a church family, and I was very lonely. I got through everything by talking with Jesus, and I'm so glad I knew him, but I would have really thrived if I had been in community. After I graduated from college, I moved back home to work and wait to marry my college sweetheart, David, who's in the room tonight. I had just turned 23, and Marcia, who was 19, had taken a semester off from Texas Tech. After Christmas break, she decided it wasn't the place for her and came home for the spring and summer, aligned her heart with God, and decided to change schools and major in Christian counseling. She left for Bible college in California on a Monday morning with her best friend. And 2 days later, in August of 85, she died in a one-car accident in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I found out when I came home from work and my parents and Lisa met me at the door. I was astounded. I used to hear my mom cry at night, and I had always asked God to please not let my parents lose another child before he took them home. That wasn't his plan, but it was so hard to accept, and it took years for me to truly work through it with the Lord. Years later, I realized the reason it had taken so long was because I never had the chance to really grieve for Rusty. David and I got married in 87 and had 4 great kids. In 98, when our oldest was 7 and our youngest was 2, my mom was misdiagnosed with the flu. Less than a week later, ER doctors recognized that she really had bacterial meningitis and performed emergency brain surgery. With Daddy by her side every day, she spent almost a year in and out of the hospital and had several more brain surgeries. During that year, I wanted so much for her to be healed, but I always prayed, "Please, God, let me be like Job. Please don't let me lose my faith, God." After her last surgery, she never woke up. About 6 weeks later, she died at home, 19 years ago, about right now, tonight. And we had her service 2 days before Thanksgiving, and she had just turned 62. Daddy lived alone for the next 14 years, always the first to find a reason to have a celebration. He did a great job of continuing the special traditions Mama started. We have great memories from the times he went with us to the beach on vacation and spending lots of time with him doing family things. His favorite saying was, "Everything happens the way it's supposed to," which was his way of reminding us that God always uses everything for good in the end. A few days after New Year's in 2014, my dad thought he had the flu and was afraid to let me visit. He got worse, and I planned to take him to the doctor. When I arrived, I decided to call an ambulance. In the ER, initial tests revealed he'd had a heart attack. He had 2 more in the ER. Doctors revived him, and I stayed with him through the night in the ICU. In the morning, he signed his own paperwork for tests, still with his sense of humor. The last moment I saw him awake, he laughed. Tests showed that bypass surgery was needed, so he remained sedated. The surgery went well, and seeing that Daddy was a strong fighter, the doctors were pulling for him. I stayed in the hospital with him, only going home to sleep 3 times. One day, one of the doctors knelt down in front of me and said, "I want to make sure you know that he isn't getting better now." I told him I did, and then I knew Daddy was in God's hands. On the 18th day in ICU with family close, and right after Lisa got in the room with us, Daddy passed away at 77 years old in February of 2014. After the initial shock was over, I felt lost. He was the last parent Lisa and I had who understood all the loss we'd gone through as a family. In my need to grieve, we pulled back from our many service responsibilities at our church of 25 years. I needed the time alone, but eventually I became very lonely. My grief and the difficulties we were facing were really hard on our marriage, but David was patient. God brought us to Watermark after the isolation of grief when we moved to Daddy's home. David and I started attending Reengage to work on our marriage in February of 2016, and I finally got the nerve to attend Grief Share at the end of that spring session and then went through the whole session that fall. It was good to talk through things with others who understood. We have a wonderful community group, and God has used his people and studying his word to bring me out of isolation and into the fellowship of believers again. I'm so glad we have the ministry called Shift for grieving children. Such a ministry would have benefited me greatly. David and I began serving in Reengage in January 2017, and I began serving in Grief Share in January of this year. On the very Sunday before my first time to serve in Grief Share, JP preached a sermon on the gift you didn't want. He was talking about singleness for people who aren't married right now. God used that sermon to confirm that grief has been my gift I didn't want. He didn't have to take away my family members to make me depend on him, but in the midst of grief, he showed his care for me, and that is a gift I want to share. Please know I'm not here to tell you that I have it all together. God has a whole lot of work left to do in me. But looking back over the years, I've seen the faithfulness of God, and I know him in a way I never did before. In the brokenness of grief, God has worked on my rough edges, and he will continue to work in my life. Philippians 1:6, "For I am confident of this very thing, that he who began a good work in you will perfect it until the day of Christ Jesus." I have seen him do mighty things in my weakness, and I can truly say that I have experienced in great degree the peace that passes all understanding, Philippians 4:6-7. I've experienced fears and nightmares, but I have learned to rely on God and trust him, to try to resolve conflict quickly, to say goodbye and give hugs, to say I love you, to give my fears to him, and to read his word. I know he can be trusted. It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Deuteronomy 31:8. When I remember, it's so I can remember the way God has helped me in the hard moments. Philippians 3:13-14 says, "One thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. For me, this means putting the feelings of devastation and overwhelming loss behind me and to remember the good. Remember because it helps me and others to know the goodness, kindness, and faithfulness of God. One special way that God has shown his love for me is through my youngest sister, Lisa. She was born with a birth defect similar to Connie's, but God restored her health after two major surgeries as a baby. She lives in Lubbock with her husband and their two sons, and it is a joy to be her sister. We've always been close, and I'm so thankful to God for her. God has always given me grace-filled moments during grief. He showed me a beautiful example of grace and forgiveness when he let me find three amazing letters written by my mother. The first was to the doctor who tried to save Connie's life, thanking him for doing everything he could and giving him grace. The second to our church asking for the members to rally around and pray for the boys in Rusty's Sunday school class and the two men and their families who were with the boys on the camping trip. The third was to my sister's friend and her family, expressing concern for her healing and well-being after going through the accident with Marcia. All three of the letters acknowledged God's sovereignty over our lives and acceptance of his plan for the lives of her children. She let each of them know that she didn't harbor any bitterness toward them. She also told them that she knew her children were with Jesus and that it would be harder in many ways for the other people to live with what had happened to them. and she knew that they would need support. My mother was a woman of remarkable faith, demonstrated in so many ways. After my sister and I were both married, our granddaddy Han passed away. As we were leaving the graveside service, a man asked about the three Han children buried there. My mother said, "They are my children." She then put her arms around Lisa and I, pulled us close, and said with sincerest love and hope, "But look what I still have." She cherished us. As I close, I want most for you to know the hope that I have in Jesus. He has helped me to go on living, to have life after loss, and to endure. He is faithful. I've told my husband that after all the losses, I feel very fragile. Fragile in my human ability to do this, to go on, and to do the tasks before me. But being fragile helps me see how strong God is and how I can do all things only through Christ who strengthens me. Philippians 4:13. As long as I'm here on the earth, I want to share the goodness of God with others. And when I'm gone, it will be glory. Philippians 1:21 says, "For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." When I see Jesus' face, I won't have to ask any questions. I'll understand, and I'll know it was worth it all.